We've got Tony Gosling with us. We're just going to promote him to become a panelist, and he should be with us any second shortly. And of course, it's great to have him. So we will be getting into all sorts of stuff with Tony Gosling any second now. Here we go. We should get him with us now.
Hi, hi Warren. Thank you very much for asking me.
Good evening, Tony. How the devil are you?
Well, pretty well. And quite excited about this emergency Bilderberg meeting. I mean, we've been following the Bilderberg. I mean, okay, so I first started in the mid-1990s, and I've seen a whole kind of bunch of people come and go. But the most recent lot, really, for the last 10-15 years, have been really convening around Dan Dix from Canada, Charlie Skelton, who has been writing the comedy pieces for The Guardian, who's right in the middle of putting together Saturday Night Live on Sky for tomorrow. No, I think it's Saturday evening that goes out. So comedy
Yeah.
writing, comedy gold, because butter
Let's have
wouldn't melt
a.
it.
So we have the Bilderberg meeting, Tony. Where's it going to be held?
Well, it's not going to be anywhere. It is right now in Washington, D.C. at the Salamander Hotel on Maryland Avenue, all sealed off this morning, and they've been arriving as we speak. So it's a 4-day conference, but they call it a 2-day conference. So the Thursday and the Sunday are sort of rest days, but they do have a bit of business and a bit of meeting, and of course, plenty of time for informal deals and
To be done.
handshakes to be done. Now, a lot of people will say they don't need to do an in-person meeting. This sort of stuff can all be done on the sly,
Yeah.
online or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, they are paranoid about emails. They're paranoid about internet.
Not surprised.
They keep well away from the internet. The whole place is completely swept, so they can have direct face-to-face deals.
Yeah.
Now, this is particularly an extraordinary Bilderberg meeting because, for the main reason that we've got this Iran war in the background, and what tells us it's so extraordinary, two main things. Firstly, this year's conference, which is starting right now, was only revealed on, I think it was Easter Sunday, over the Easter weekend anyway, by NATO.
Yeah.
NATO, as far as I know, have never ever been the first people to mention a Bilderberg conference in their press release, and they
No.
mentioned that Mark Rutte, the Secretary General, is going to be over in the United States for talks with Trump and for the Bilderberg conference. So it didn't
Yes.
take much going through the various big hotels in Washington to figure out
To
where it's
find
taking
out.
place, Warren.
So, which, let's get into this then, Tony. First of all, for the people who don't know, and there will be people out there who don't know. What is the Bilderberg Group? What does it do, and why is it so significant?
Well, okay, so let's do a bit of a, if you're on the moon looking down, because sometimes when you're in the middle of these things, it's difficult to see as a journalist or anybody else. The fact is that the Bilderberg conference that was convened for the first time in 1954, exactly 10 years after the big battle in the main town in Arnhem, Oosterbeek, a suburb of Arnhem, where the first Bilderberg meeting took place. And in that is a clue about its role, because various people who were involved in the Battle of Arnhem and the Nazi victory there were Bilderbergers. In fact, two of them were chairmen of the Bilderberg conferences, who were both involved in this battle where the British 1st Airborne Division were abandoned basically by the army to their fate. Lord Carrington, who was a Bilderberg chairman, and of course, you will
Yes.
probably know he was the Defence Secretary at the time of Bloody
Was.
Sunday in 1972.
He was.
He was actually a captain in his tank in the Grenadier Guards, sitting on Nijmegen Bridge. He just crossed, very, very glad that it hadn't blown up just as he crossed it in the middle of this battle, because the Nazis were planning to blow these bridges as the British advanced. So
Yeah.
he was very lucky to be alive. His life was saved by a guy called Captain Moffat T. Burris in the 82nd Airborne Division, who cut the detonation wires just a few minutes before the British tanks crossed. But the big conundrum is when the tanks at Arnhem stopped at Nijmegen Bridge. Of course, this is the bridge, penultimate one before the Bridge Too Far.
Yes.
The whole tank column stopped. Carrington was in the lead tank, and so Moffat Burris and his American paratrooper friends went right up to Carrington in the, and it's this is played by Robert Redford in the film. Moffat Burris is The Bridge Too Far, and so I know it sounds like a convoluted story, but I'll come to the point eventually. And so he points his, he actually told me before he died, he told me that he pointed his Tommy gun to Carrington's head and he said, "Get down that road to save those paratroopers before I blow your blankety blank head off." And Carrington said, "I can't, I am just following orders, I'm staying here." And then he battened himself down inside his tank and he stayed there. So as a result, the 1st Airborne Division were abandoned. We heard from Harmel, who was interviewed for a book by a British colonel, whose name escapes me right now. But anyway, that in that book, Harmel, the SS general, explains that if they'd carried on, the battle would have been all over. So they should have carried on anyway. So this was a Nazi victory with complicity from within the British Army, and so 10 years later, the Bilderberg meetings convene in Oosterbeek, which was the suburb of Arnhem, where the British were surrounded in the in what was called the Hexenkessel, the Witch's Cauldron, and so many 1st Airborne paratroopers were massacred. So that's the actual origin, I think, of the Bilderberg term. But what came out of the Bilderberg was this extra bit of time that this victory for the Nazis in Arnhem gave to the Nazi high command to arrange their affairs and squirrel away their wealth in places like Argentina and Switzerland for a recrudescence after the Second World War. And it was crucial for them to have that extra bit of time. And after the war, once this Fourth Reich, this financial empire, had been established using the Nazi money, mostly from Switzerland, laundered through the Dulles Brothers law firm, Sullivan & Cromwell, and then injected into these companies that had been set up by Hitler's treasurer, Martin Bormann, over in Argentina, who did survive the war, by the way. There's photographs of him in Buenos Aires in the 1970s, taken by Ladislas Fraga, which was published in the Daily Express one Saturday. Martin Bormann is alive. Look, we got photos of him. So those companies were set up by Bormann. The money was put into the companies. And that, I think, is one of the major things that we're dealing with today, which is a covert, secret financial empire, which uses banks instead of tanks to take over companies and countries alike.
Fantastic. There we go. So that is basically the history of the Bilderberg Group. The thing that we have, of course, is the anointed ones from World Economic Forum and places like that.
That's right.
Do you now Bilderberg? Do you get chosen and then led up to it, or do you get invited once you've made it? How does it work? Are you
Well, very
invited?
much the former. I think it's the former. What happens is, because I mean, I certainly wouldn't characterize all of the attendees over the decades. And it's worth also mentioning that if you look at the first few years, the late 1950s, the German attendees at the Bilderberg conferences, and Manfred Petritsch from All Smoke and Mirrors did a marvelous job on exposing this. Many of the Germans who were sitting down there with people like Hugh Gaitskell, who was the Labour Party leader, were actually Nazi war criminals. It's just
They
that
were.
it wasn't known about. So these people had been doing things like they were involved in the theft of masses and masses of Jewish wealth during the war. They were involved in the high top end of the strategy of Joseph Goebbels' propaganda machine. These sorts of things were what, I mean, remember, editors of the Nazi newspapers, Rosenberg, etc., Stryker, they were executed. So propaganda, the lies that were being told through the Nazi mass media were considered war crimes. So these were the people who, unbeknownst to many of the Western, the Americans and the Europeans, non-German Europeans sitting down at this first Bilderberg meeting in 1954, they had no idea that these guys had been so deeply involved in the Third Reich and in the SS and the war effort. So that's worth bearing in mind. The chairman from the start was a guy called Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who was one of the first German royalty to join the SS in the early 1930s, and he'd then married into the Dutch royal family. But he was trusted by the British. He wasn't trusted by the Americans because the
Yeah.
Americans knew he was ex-SS and they wouldn't let him know anything. But he was actually involved in the Arnhem operation. He was behind the scenes chatting with people like Monty, etc. And so he was able to make sure that the Nazis knew all about this massive parachute landing that was coming in Holland. And then he was made the chairman of the Bilderberg after the war in 1954 for 20 years. And in 1975, he was discredited in the Lockheed scandal, and so he had to resign as Bilderberg chairman. But another thing to note is just a couple of weeks ago, another Bilderberg chairman by the name of Etienne Davignon, he was chairman around about the year 2000 for a few years. He was the chairman of Société Générale de Belgique, which is a big financial and insurance institution in Belgium. Etienne Davignon is now on trial for the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, who was the leader of
Wow.
the Congo. So this
Yeah.
is literally was announced by the Financial Times and others that this particular Bilderberg chairman was one of the leading lights in the assassination of course,
Remember.
yeah, Lumumba is a very important person. He was
He
one of the
is.
most advanced, intellectual, articulate leaders that Africa came up with after the end of the colonial days.
He
And it's
was.
absolutely clear now that this Belgian financier, Davignon, and the Bilderberg chairman was one of the key people. Well, it will be. Let's see what happens in this trial if he manages. He'll probably dodge it by some reason, saying, "I can't remember who I am," or something like that, because he's very old,
Yeah.
Davignon. And so it gives you an idea of the characteristic of some of these Bilderberg chairmen. One of them is a former SS officer who betrayed the plans of the Arnhem invasion to the Abwehr in September 1944. And another one is the guy who refused to go and help the first airborne on the day from his 30 Corps Sherman tank. And another one is an assassin of a black African leader, one of the first after the Second World War to be when Africa supposedly got its independence. But as we know, of course, this was a neo-colonial phase where they went over to having puppet leaders, and this is what Bilderberg is all about. It's about puppet leaders. These people who they put in. So, for example, the question you asked me right at the start, people like Tony Blair, Bill Clinton, they were invited to Bilderberg meetings before they ever came to power, or
Yes.
actually Blair, just as he was coming to power. And so it's quite obvious this is a place where leaders are selected. So their role at the moment, though, is really interesting, I think, because of this Iran
Yeah.
war with Trump. It's absolutely riveting because you've got this maniacal Lord of Chaos is now become the emperor. Every 5 minutes he thinks something different. It doesn't look as if even he doesn't have to rationalize anything he's saying. It doesn't matter if his sentences are totally contradictory. It doesn't seem to matter at all. So this is exactly the sort of nightmare scenario that one could imagine causing a third world war with somebody like Trump with his finger on the trigger. He's trying very hard to bounce the Iranians into making a deal as if he's trying to negotiate with some sort of Manhattan property developer or a
Yeah,
land
exactly that.
speculator. And I'm afraid the Iranians are not the same to do those sort of deals with. But anyway, it's a very, very dangerous form of brinkmanship where something could happen when he sets one of his deadlines. And so the Bilderberg is convening, Warren, at this time, very early, 6 weeks ahead of normal, so it's normally the end of May, beginning of June, at an emergency session, really. I think that the whole purpose of this meeting, in very interesting, the first ever serving MI6 Director General, Blaise
Yeah,
Metrovelli,
Blaise
is there
Maturel.
right now. They are basically trying to get together to see what can we do about Trump? How do we stop Trump blowing the world to smithereens in a massive nuclear holocaust? So they think are very clever, aren't they, at painting themselves as the
Yeah.
good guys? But of course,
Yes,
they are
they're nothing
connected
but.
to the very same people who have started this war, Warren.
Yeah, and exactly that. And I remember, of course, not only that, many African leaders were killed at the time, people like Trujillo, Nilis is waiting to speak, and then we're going to have a look at the list of the Bilderberg people. Nilis.
Well, there's two lists
Yes,
this
I've
year.
got both. I've
Yeah,
got
good.
both. Nilis.
Yeah, well, the Nazis and, well, ex-Nazis, former Nazis, and the Nazi money and Nazi gold, responsible for the creation of the European community.
There we go,
Because,
Tony. Tony,
well,
were they?
Bilderberg certainly was, and the US ambassador to Germany said as much. When I was first researching this, I was wondering, what is this? Of course, the United States of Europe, we should really call it, is really just a confederation based on the United States of America lines. The idea is all the power is concentrated in the center. And if you look at the Masonic influence, particularly through Giuseppe Mazzini and Albert Pike, in the American Civil War, Pike had done a very good job in what effectively what they managed to do in the American Civil War was really consolidate power at the center of the United States in Washington. So it became the very powerful federal government, which it hadn't been before. Lots of the individual American states were agitating, and some had actually split away. In fact, that's what the Civil War was largely about, is they weren't happy about the way that the United States were no longer united. And the same exact thing was going on with Giuseppe Mazzini over in Italy. He was doing a very similar thing in getting all of these various Italian city-states and individual kingdoms to unite in one country. So that's exactly, of course, what's happened with the European Union. Without being asked, billions of Europeans have been told, well, sorry, everybody, but you're now going to be run from Brussels, and you can elect an MEP, but your MEP won't be able to actually write any laws. All they can do is discuss and debate and maybe stop the laws, which are written by appointees, the European Commission.
Must
So
be
so
half the reason.
the answer is yes, most definitely yes. And because, of course, many of the corporations that were created by Bormann, the massive multinationals that we're talking about today, don't care about national borders. In fact,
No.
they hate the idea of nationality.
They do,
They want to be able to
yeah.
move their goods and services. They want to be able to move their employees around. In fact, they want to be able to treat their employees like goods to be moved about whichever is the most convenient place for them. And of course, they also want to move their profits around depending on whereabouts they pay less tax. So you're dealing with an internationalist elite, really, both in terms of
Right.
the European Union and in terms of the Bilderberg. And of course, there are loads of other. What about the World Economic Forum? It's all run along very similar lines, and you'll find many of the people at the World Economic Forum are also at the Bilderberg. It's just the Bilderberg conferences are far more secret.
They are. And just in case you were wondering when Tony was talking about the Nazis, you've only got to look at how many females and other people that have Nazi grandparents that are now in power in positions. You've got Annalena Baerbock, who's now the Secretary General of the EU. You've got people like Blaise Metrovelli, whose great grandfather was a Ukrainian. Basically, he was a Nazi sympathizer, sent many people off to die. You've got people like Baerbock, you've got people like von der Leyen, you've got people like Kallas's great grandfather. That were involved, and there are many others as well, marrying lots of these leaders, lots of these people that are in the EU. Nilis, very quickly, and then we're going to get on with the list.
Well, I think behind every good Nazi, you'll find this iron. That's what I was going
Yes,
to
you
say.
probably will. Yes, yeah, we shall talk about that a bit. Let's get into the list then, because this is the first page of the Bilderberg attendees. I'm just going to remove me from the video, Tony, so you can go. I'm going to go through the list and you can stop me when you want to get to somebody interesting here. So this is the Bilderberg meeting 2026, Washington, D.C., 9th to the 12th of April. And this is the list of the participants.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'd just like to do one thing before we do the list, and that is to look at their agenda, because that's come out today. It's not on this particular list you've got here, the original one. Because when they release this stuff to the press, as you can see across there, it says confidential, and on the other versions of it I've seen, it says not for publication. So remember, this is a press release. So your viewers and your listeners need to understand this is a press release not for publication. What the hell is that? A press release not for publication is really a message to the press saying, don't cover this.
Yes.
Okay? So that's in a nutshell, that's what it is. So they're looking at number one on the list is AI. Obviously, this is very important. They're not really saying what type of AI, but of course, we understand that AI is off the leash. It's being used for genocide now. The idea is that military officers and enlisted men, such as those people who watch your program, Warren, if they can't be persuaded to commit a war crime, the AI can. Hence the benefit of AI. Hence the massive amount of money and hype that's gone into it. Because the idea is you just flick a switch saying, well, my men won't go and massacre this village. So, I don't know, let's just let the AI do it instead. So this, I think, is the real role of the massive amount of money that's gone into AI. People might think it makes great pictures or something, but that's really just a spin-off of what is primarily, I think, a tactical military and strategic, maybe even military decision-making system to cut out the human soul from the entire process of killing, mass killing. So number two, they've got Arctic security. Obviously, this is to do, I suppose, with the submarines underneath, and also, of course, to do with Greenland, etc. That's the other Trump's desire to take Greenland
before he annexes it. Yeah.
Well, Stoltenberg, who's the I think he's now the finance minister in Denmark. He was the prime minister and the secretary general of NATO. He's at this Bilderberg conference. I'm quite certain he will have a few things to say about Donald Trump's desire to take over Greenland. Then we've got China, who are, I mean, just again to put it in context. Bilderberg is the NATO countries, right? So it's the political wing of NATO in a way. So you won't get China in there, or Africa, India, anything like that. You may get somebody who's from there, but they will be something like the Carnegie offices in India, maybe, sometimes will appear. So China, of course, they'll be talking all about China. What are we going to do about China? The Chinese intelligence works very hard. They try to stay out of the limelight, as you know. They haven't even really pushed very hard against this Iran war in the UN Security Council, even though they could have done.
Oh,
they haven't.
Wait till a bit, Tony, wait till a bit later. Have we got a revelation for you?
Well, maybe. Okay. Then we've got digital finance, which, of course, is the financial elite, the Bank for International Settlements, the World Economic Forum, the Bilderbergers. Attempt to take over the money system with blockchain, digital money, and central bank digital currencies. That is also on the agenda. Energy diversification. Well, which way are we going to go? We're not allowed, apparently, to go back to coal. But they're obviously realizing that the concentration of energy in one form or another. I mean, if you look at nuclear, it's no good. Nuclear energy is extremely expensive. It's extremely dirty, even though they talk about it as clean energy. Point number six on their agenda is Europe. Then we've got number seven, global trade. These are sort of obvious. Eight, the Middle East, also fairly obvious. Russia. Russia always comes up at Bilderberg as a problem, right? It's a problem, Russia. So there's been this press release by John Healey, a press conference today.
I know, we'll cover that a bit later.
The Russians sending their submarines to have a look at our communications under the sea. Making it, well, of course they are. We are involved in bombing Russia. So why on earth would they not be looking at our communications under the sea? And they're also, of course, doing this thing where they're sailing their warships through to protect the tankers, the Russian tankers that are coming through. Now, why would they not do that, protect their own tankers? Of course they will. What they're saying is, look, please don't board our tankers. We really don't want to have a war with you. The British, it seems to me, have got no courage, Healy and his friends, and no guts to actually follow through. So if there's an unarmed tanker with no soldiers on it, they will try and steal it like a pirate. But if there is a warship nearby and maybe a whole bunch of Marines from the Russia on that tanker, well, they will leave it alone, you see?
Well, so we'll be covering here. That in great detail.
Brilliant.
Later on.
All right, well, we're nearly there. Anyway, so number 10 is the transatlantic defence industrial relationship. Well, of course, this is the people who make money from war. There's quite a lot of privatization is there now in the system. Many of these arms companies, as you know, Warren, are making a fortune out of these wars, but actually the kit they're supplying is not really much good. There are all sorts of problems, for example, with the British tanks. Isn't it an armored personnel carrier, which it rattles like crazy and doesn't actually work, and yet vast amounts of money have been spent. Anyway, so it's a privatized and disastrous system they're talking about here, and it's nowhere near as advanced as the Chinese or the Russian defense equipment. Then there's Ukraine on the list, obviously. USA is on the list, which is really, I suppose, a way of saying Donald Trump, what the hell are we going to do about him? The future of warfare, and finally the West. So it's a little bit bland, but you get an idea of the sorts of talks that will be taking place at the Bilderberg.
Well, I'm going to go through some of these, Tony, and then you can stop me at the interesting ones. And there are, of course, some very interesting names here. Henri de Castries is the co-chair, along with Marie-José Kravis, chair of the Museum of the Modern Art. Now, on this list, we have
Well,
Stacey
she's not
Abrams.
just, you see, be aware, she's not just the chairman of the Museum of the Modern Art, right? So that's this is these what they say on the right-hand side here with one of their roles. This is for the stupid people. This is for the lazy journalists. Somebody like Marie Jose Kravis is a financier who happens also to be the chair of the of Museum of Modern Art. So as we run through, you'll see there are all sorts of people who there's some sort of obscure little company, but actually the person is much more well known as one of the chiefs of their national intelligence service or something like that, but that's not mentioned on here. So the idea of these lists is, yes, to put the names, but also to mislead journalists. And there is a that most years there's a guy that puts out an at what he calls an annotated Bilderberg list. And I'll try and share that as soon as it arrives, which is including a whole section on each Bilderberger, which explains what they're really like, which is a great service. I'm not sure who it is that does it. It's an anonymous person. But anyway.
Great stuff. So we've got Stacey Abrams. I know of her, of course. Marco Alvera, Anne Applebaum, the staff writer on The Atlantic, who is married, is she not, to a certain Polish gentleman, Tony?
I don't know. I'm not sure who she's married to. Who's that?
She is married to Sikorsky.
Ah, right. He's also on here then.
And then, of course, we've got Murray Auchincloss, the
Sikorsky
former.
was a Bullingdon Club, of
He
course, with
was,
Cameron and Osborne.
and then we've got Jose Manuel Barroso, now very good friend of Ursula von der Leyen. I've seen them hanging out quite often from
Well, yeah,
Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs feature very highly. Which is why it was no surprise for me when Rishi Sunak was made Prime Minister, because he's from Goldman Sachs, and I think he's gone back to Goldman Sachs now. So the Goldman Sachs is the bank of choice of the elite, and of course they have had a very important role around the world in trying to bribe and corrupt countries such as Malaysia, with the 1MDB scandal. Goldman Sachs were at the heart of all that. When the government nearly fell, and there was a massive fraud was perpetrated on them, and so Goldman Sachs are really the one of the main organisations at the Bilderberg meetings.
Let's get into some more names then. When you look down, there's a few that stand out. If you want to pick any others out, by all means, do. Scott Bessent, the Secretary of the Treasury of the USA,
Right.
that sticks out like a sore thumb. You've got Borga Brenda, the disgraced and now resigned President of the World Economic Forum. I'm sure he'd be welcome with open arms. We've got also on the list there. As we go down, Mark Carney. Now he's not attending, is he, Tony? He's pulled out.
That's right. Well, you see, this is where we have to rely on those with the good telephoto lenses, right? Because quite often the name is taken off the list
Then turns
or it's
up.
not published on the final list. Of course, this what we're looking at now was never meant to be published anywhere. This is a confidential list. So these were the people they, I imagine, invited. So Let's speculate with somebody like Mark Carney. Now, this is going to make it news if he's there, because this is a meeting about what to do about Trump.
Yes.
This is suddenly becomes extremely politically charged. So you might well find that Mark Carney is there or does turn up just for a day, but he's not on the official list. So
Well,
th
while
this
you're
is, I can
talking.
remember going back as far as the 1990s. Tony Blair was a UK Prime Minister. I think it was 98. And I actually spoke to a lady who'd been into the Bilderberg conference and was doing working in the kitchen. And she said, "Oh, Tony Blair was there this morning. I served him breakfast." Now,
Yeah.
he wasn't on the list. So, do you see what I mean? There
Yeah.
are people who do get invited, but they're taken off the list because suddenly everything starts to look more suspicious than they would like. They don't want press intrusion. And so I would imagine that Carney's a very important role in the world right now.
He has,
He's
yeah.
become really the cheerleader for the anti-Trump faction. And I would
He
argue, of course, that the Bilderberg, it paints itself as the sensible guys. We are the anti-Trump faction. We are going to try and save the world from Trump. Whereas actually they are in on the game, that so the
Yeah,
very
exactly
highest
that.
people like Carney know exactly what's going on.
I
And the
noticed
people
as
who,
well, I noticed
sorry?
as well, when you're talking about taking care of Trump, I noticed Daniel Driscoll, the Secretary of the Army. Now, that's an interesting name, Tony, because when Ukraine and Russia were having a chat about sorting out the bodies, and as they do in Dubai, Daniel Driscoll burst into the meeting and demanded to try and have a chat with them. So Daniel Driscoll is quite a powerful figure.
So just explain what you mean there. What were they doing about bodies? And he wants to
Uh,
talk to
so
who?
base so basically what happens is Ukraine, I'll just put my face back up there for 2 seconds. So Ukraine and Russia meet, well, not secretly, because quite a few of us know about it, but they meet in Dubai. And what they do is they meet in a hotel to sort out prisoner
Ah,
exchanges
right,
and the
okay.
bodies being sent back. Now, what happened was during one of these meetings, Daniel Driscoll burst in basically without any invitation whatsoever and demanded to be part of the meeting and put forward some proposals. So that's why Daniel Driscoll sort of sprung out off the page for me.
Yeah, well, there are quite a few people from the American war machine here, including those people involved in finance, particularly. So the Secretary of
Yes.
the Treasury. So anyone that's having to pay for all of the destruction of Iran, for example, these incredible missions that have been taking place from Fairford down the Mediterranean and back with these B-52s and the B-1s. And one, I mean, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. I think it was yesterday, maybe even Tuesday. We had a B-52 land at Fairford with all its munitions
Yes.
still on the pylons. So the
Yes.
idea is we sent these off to bomb, and then the order came no ceasefire. And so they came back with all their bombs.
Yeah, exactly that. And as we go down the list, we've got Daniel Ek, who's the chair of Spotify. Jose Luis Escrivá, who's the governor of
Yeah,
the
but
Bank
hang
of
on, they
Spain.
talk about Spotify. That sounds innocuous, doesn't it? But he's
Yeah.
also the boss of a new AI drone startup, right?
Yes.
Which they haven't
Yeah.
mentioned. So there's
No.
loads of money. I mean, the people may not have heard much about that company. I can't remember the name of it now. They might not know much about it, but this is something which into the future is going to make a lot of money for somebody. And the more wars there are, the more AI drone startups are going to suddenly become billion-dollar companies.
Yes.
And so he's, they're being sneaky by saying these little things here.
Meta Fredrickson's on there. There's a name that jumped out. Now just been put in charge of Ukraine's finances. Krista Freeland, who
Ah.
of course is was the deputy of Canada, and of course has all sorts of neo-Nazi connection.
Yeah, and as you pointed out quite rightly, there's quite a few of these characters in there. If we go down a little bit further,
Yeah.
you've got
What's
the.
Kalia Kallas doing in there?
Well, I go up a little bit because there's this guy Kevin Harrington. Senior Director of Strategic Planning at the National Security Council. What an interesting chappy he
Wow.
is. He's the guy that says, it's going to cost this much. Yeah, okay, you can do it. So for example, when it comes to the Nord Stream pipeline operation, this is a covert op plan by the Central Intelligence Agency and other agencies. They
Yeah.
will come back to him and they'll say it's going to cost this much, and he'll put his thumb up and say yes, let's do it, or no, that's too expensive. So he's a
Yeah.
very powerful, a very interesting figure to have. This is another very much somebody that you need if you're going to start a war,
Yes, very
or
much
maybe
so.
even to stop one, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we've got Kalia Kallis, so I think she must be there as the entertainment. Alex Karp, CEO of Palantir, jumped out at me there, Tony.
Well, Palantir obviously very, very important about merging the technologies of satellite, drone, and mass murder,
Yeah.
and AI. So he's also involved, of course, with these Peter Mandelson conversations that Mandelson had when he was ambassador, which have brought about these massive Palantir contracts with the British government. And various departments, including health, defence, police, our Home Office, Palantir contracts now. So what Palantir are doing, of course, is they're scooping up massive amounts of data from the British departments of state, the big departments of state. And
Yeah.
as a result, they are able to profile everything. So this is, if you wanted to run a government by remote control, Palantir is are your guys, so they can
Yeah.
manage the, and they will then say to a Secretary of State for Health, for example, it's okay, you don't need a Department for Health anymore, you don't need Home Office anymore, because Palantir is doing it all in the most efficient way using AI. You can sack all your civil servants, just hand it all over to us. So that's really what Alex Karp is there to do.
Yeah, and we've got also on this list, we've got Christine Lagarde, David Lammy, and Ursula von der Leyen.
Right, Ursula and Lagarde apparently are not on. Well, they're not on the final list. So
Wow.
these are people I would imagine it. There is an open invite to, because they're so central to the Anglo-Zionist Empire, the Western Order, the United States of Europe, all these institutions. So they have not appeared on the final list. So that probably means that they're not going to be there, although it's always a good idea to try and check out what is von der Leyen up to this weekend. And you might find, oh, she's just got nothing to do. Well, that means she's at Bilderberg.
Yeah, we've got David Lammy and the Prime Minister of
Up, up,
Greece.
go up. Hang on, hang on. Up, up, stop. Nicholas Lerner.
Yeah, Director General of DGSE. Yes,
So
not there's lots.
you know who they are.
Yeah.
That's the French intelligence service.
It is.
So remember, he is a serving boss of French intelligence.
He is.
And isn't it interesting that you've also got on the updated list, which we're not looking at right now, Blaise Metrowelli, who's the
Yes.
Director General of MI6. So
MI6, yeah.
starting to look like the EU intelligence gathering, where they are going to be telling all the politicians and financial people what they know about what
Yes.
to do about Trump.
I think you could be right there. As we go down, we've got Mitsotakis, the Greek Prime Minister, and of course Ross McInnes jumped out on me there as the President of the Safran Group, and of course as we're scrolling down, the King and the Queen of the Netherlands.
Yeah, so
Yeah,
that add a little bit of glitz, won't it, to it all?
absolutely.
And of course, this is the way you schmooze people. Oh, I've never met the King of the Netherlands before. Let's have a little chat with him.
Yes.
Now, remember, you've got, I mean, the European royalty are, generally speaking, pretty interrelated.
They
They
are.
have a tradition of what you might call the Holy Roman Empire, which is an unofficial club, or some would call a cult, of European aristocracy that had been going for centuries. Now, the Dutch were responsible for the Glorious Revolution here in the late 1600s, in the 17th century in England, where you had the English Civil War, which was a disaster, put Cromwell in charge and a military dictatorship in the 1649 and into the 1650s. It was a disaster. And so they decided to invite Charles II back after Cromwell's death. So in the 1660s, there was this thing called the Restoration, which was an absolute outpouring of relief that the king was back, right? Anyway, don't count your chickens, because it was the Dutch royal family that brought back the Prince of Orange, William, to take back over the British crown from Charles's successors. So there's been a battle, a tug of war for the British crown over the years, and that was really the final nail in the coffin for the Jacobites. And so they're very important, the Dutch royal family, and I think we need to understand that they also have very closed groups. So this is the orders of chivalry, like the Order of the Garter, the Teutonic Knights. These go back centuries, Warren.
There's some other names that pop out here as well. Samuel Papiro, the commander of the US Indo-Pacific Command. That's a very interesting name to have turning up at this thing.
Well, this is because NATO is extending its reach to the Pacific and Southeast Asia. And so, because this is really a NATO political meeting, people like to talk about it in different ways. They rule the world. No, this is NATO, the NATO countries. So it's interesting to have somebody from that arm of NATO really almost representing the US CIA MI6 views on what should be going on in the Asia Pacific region militarily.
And then we've got, of course, Mark Rutter, and there you can see further down, Radislaw Sikorsky, Minister of Foreign Affairs, who's married to Anne Applebaum.
That's right. Well, Rutte is a very he's in a bit of an interesting spot, because yesterday, Wednesday, he had a conversation with Donald Trump about NATO, right? Which I would imagine like to have been a fly on the wall there. Because Trump is very annoyed that NATO have not just kind of gone along with his crazy thing, even though he didn't tell anybody. He then gets annoyed because people don't just do as he says, even though he's not consulted with anybody. Of course, this is a recipe for chaos. And I was really surprised to see that Rutte, who's taken over from Stoltenberg now as NATO Secretary General, didn't do a press conference. So he's obviously very, he's been told, don't say anything, because
No,
anything
exactly
you
that.
might say might be taken the wrong way, and it could cause all sorts of trouble. Because this to me is the big theme of this Bilderberg conference, is this split between Trump and NATO.
Absolutely. And as we can see, as we go further down, we've got Jens Stoltenberg, of course, that we've just spoken about, who was the former head of NATO. And then we've got old Tombstone Teeth himself, the boring Terminator, Alexander Stubb, is in there. And of course, we've got Rishi Sunak as we go further down. And then
Well,
another
he's one of the names that doesn't appear on the final list.
name. And
So
then
it
we've
may
got.
be that they've decided, a bit like Carney, to have a prime minister, former prime minister in this case, the last prime minister. It makes it all look a little bit too like a conspiracy of people in the know getting together.
Well, you can't get more conspiratorial than to have the head of Palantir and then Peter Thiel turn up.
Well, no, Peter, yes, exactly, because Thiel funded Palantir as well as PayPal and various other things. I'm just going to take a quick look to see if Thiel appears on the final list, because he's a member of the steering committee. No, he doesn't. See, they've taken Peter Thiel off. He's on the steering committee of Bilderberg. It's unthinkable that Peter Thiel is not going to be there, Warren.
Yes, I don't think for one second that he's not going to be. So let's have a look at the other list then, because we've got the participants here. And as I say, you've got Murray Ashenschloss, which I missed there earlier on. Let's go through and see some of the ones that are now have been added to the list, if we can.
Yeah, Niall
Scroll.
Ferguson there. He's a very interesting character too. He's the official modern historian in the Western world. He's done the history of the Rothschilds and things like that. So he's the guy who will sanitize history to make the bad guys look good. And so if anyone wants convincing, well, this is a good guy rather than a bad guy. He's the guy to send over to tell them, this is the official version of history. This is what you must believe. He's quite a convincing. He's on the TV the whole time, Ferguson. He gets series after series. Google DeepMind, Demis Hassabis.
Yes, I was
He's
just
there.
about to mention him. That is very troubling for me.
Lots of AI, loads and loads of AI people
Yes,
turning up
yeah, and
here.
of course, we've got the Prime Minister of the Netherlands and Paul Jonsson, the Minister for Defence in Sweden, and of course, we've got Alexander Kamyshin, the advisor to the President of Ukraine for Strategic Affairs.
So that's the Ukraine war. So you've got both the Kravises there. They list them both together. Even though Marie Jose Kravis is one of the co-chairs of Bilderberg, you can see actually, look, her hubby. Oh dear, look, Kohlberg Kravis Roberts and Company, massive, massive financial investment with billions and billions of dollars of pension funds, etc., money to invest wherever they choose. And of course, they're often investing in AI, funnily enough, which is the same as the people who are there at this conference. Would you like to invest in my new AI version of AI drone technology, which will kill 5,000 people at the press of a button? Oh, blimey, that sounds good. So we'll invest in that one. That sounds like that's going to make us a bit of money.
And there's somebody else there that was on the other list I was going to mention. Stephen Kotkin, who's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution and Stanford University. He's a very powerful figure in
Hang
academics.
on, yeah, go back to Lammy. One of your viewers is saying Prime Minister.
Well, obviously he's going to
Maybe
be.
is that, I mean, that sounds silly. That why have they put that there? Who has managed to make him Prime Minister? Well, it might well be that because he's a Fabian, and of course, as you know, probably know that the Fabian Society have furnished almost all of the Labour leaders. It may be because he's a Fabian. Oh yes, right, okay. It's a bit naughty of Bilderberg to put a typo on Lammy, though. That
I
really is
always
a bit.
thought Wes Streeting was the anointed one, but there we
No,
go.
he is. He has been to Bilderberg several times. It may
He
be that
has,
they've decided he's not convincing enough. But anyway, Metrowelli, having her
that's
there,
him.
we call her in my house Modesty Blaze. Because of course, Modesty Blaise back in I think the 1950s and 60s was a spy. But she's a very, very powerful, very important individual in the UK. So the MI6 now has extended its reach beyond the sort of James Bond world. They are very active in domestic politics as well, but most particularly in anti-Russia agitation. So the idea is let's needle the Russians as much as we can, and we can then persuade them to behave. Now, the Russians are just not going to do that, just like they didn't behave when Adolf Hitler was needling them. They are not going to. So she's wasting her time, which is why I think they've brought in someone with Nazi tendencies, with her Nazi family, to do that job.
We call her, well, I call her Bundeswehr
Oh, right,
Blaze.
okay.
Just, and of course, we've got many of these people when we go
Rutter,
down
Mark
through.
Rutter there. John
Mark
Saws.
Rutter,
John
Jason
Saws,
Smith.
he's one of Modesty Blaise's predecessors at MI6. It doesn't say that there, but he's the former Director General of MI6, John Saws.
Very much. And now, of course, Newbridge Advisory, and
Eric
of course,
Schmidt, don't miss him.
so Eric
Still
Schmidt.
the major shareholder in Google, which is an NSA front. It's basically a CIA NSA front, Google. And the idea is that Google is watching everything you do when you're typing into Google, and it wants all your it owns Android, of course. So everything you're doing on your phone is known and known about by the NSA and by Eric Schmidt.
Now, that's a British version of the guy who sorts out whether we can afford to mount various operations in various countries. Mark Sedwell, the Chair of Trustees of the International Institute for Strategic Studies.
Well,
He's a
Mark Sedwill, I'm not sure. Isn't he a former cabinet secretary? Maybe it's a different Mark Sedwill.
he is a very shadowy figure indeed. He's very he's the guy who decides whether or not Britain can go. The International Institute for Strategic Studies is basically a
Yeah,
think
he's an
tank.
ex-cabinet secretary.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so they haven't put that on there, have they?
No, they haven't. No. but it is quite incredible. They've got everything covered. I mean, you've got Alexander Wang there, the chief AI officer for Meta. He's on there as well. They have almost everything covered, don't they?
Yeah, Marcus Wallenberg, you can see
Yeah.
he owns Sweden.
Swedish
He's
bank, yeah.
controls the biggest investment funds, the banks over there. So anything that's going to be invested in is really down to Marcus Wallenberg. I met Marcus when we were in the Bilderberg in Dresden,
Yeah.
and he was a very I mean, he looks like these people look at very sort of smart and intelligent, but as soon as you say something to them which isn't the sort of way they like to think, like I said to him something along the lines of, "What do you make of Brexit?" And the word Brexit, you could see his whole body shook in a sort
Triggered
of
him,
weird,
yeah.
weird way. And it's like, no, Brexit. Anyway, so he, yeah, very. These people are very, really, very control freaky. Okay, so they have a
Yeah.
certain way of thinking, and they surround themselves with sycophantic people who just think like they do. They want basically the whole world to become copies of themselves, it seems. And
They do.
if you're a copy of them, then you're okay. You know, you're welcome, and you can have a drink. You know, but if you say something which rocks the boat at all, and this is of course exactly at what the British royal family, Charles and Camilla, are like. They
Yeah.
don't want anybody or anywhere near within earshot who might mention Diana, for example, you know. So they
Oh,
can't
God,
deal
no.
with these terrible crimes that have been committed, whether it's crimes against mass populations or their own wives, in the case of Diana. They don't want that around. And so they commit crimes, and then they have to block those crimes off in this kind of psychopathic way. They cannot think about them, they cannot talk about them, because they've managed to get away with so much in terms
Yeah.
of post-war criminality and accruing more and more wealth and power to themselves, while the rest of us are allowed to suffer on the scrap heap.
Yeah. So Tony, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes before we have to go on to the news. Give us an overview, first of all, of what you think is going to be the main topic of discussion, and secondly, what you expect to come out of this.
Well, look, I would expect there'll be a consolidation of the Carney faction. So this is the purpose of Bilderberg, is to consolidate the anti-Trump faction. So it's to make sure that all of these people who are coming along are on the same program. So they want everyone to basically trot out with the same lines. So any of these individuals that are on this list, when they appear in public, beginning of next week, watch what they say, because that will be the Bilderberg line. And this is what happens under Chatham House rules, is you're told what to think. You know, someone like Lammy, of course, is a past master at this. He doesn't think for himself at all, but he knows what powerful people think, and he will repeat it. And so that's what will give the game away as to everything that's been being talked about at this conference. And you will find quite often that particular topics that get discussed suddenly become news the week after Bilderberg. So if you're watching the news next week, see what is on there that tallies with the Bilderberg list. So there may be big
Yeah.
announcements, and it tends to happen quite quickly afterwards. So the point is, and of course it's a great thing to do, put Trump back in his box. What on earth are we going to do with this
Yeah.
Lord of Chaos in charge of one of the most powerful militaries in the world, in a dying empire that's painting itself into a corner? He's become basically very dangerous, like a cornered tiger, because of the economic disaster he's causing and the alienation of the rest of the world. The United States was already not popular, but now it's even less popular all around the world. The intellectuals of planet Earth are looking at the Americans and saying, "We want nothing more to do with these people. They are maniacs. They're trying to drag us into war." So that will be, I think, the topic of discussion. I would just hazard a guess that Carney will be putting together some very basic plans for stopping the escalation of the trouble in Iran. Everybody will be going along with this and saying, this is a great idea. Let's do this. Let's do this. So we'll find this out next week. But then, of course, the way this all works is through the war party and the intellectual party. So the war party's in charge. This is a Masonic thing from the Grand Orient. The war party's in charge. This was written about in the 1950s, and I've got some quotes if you want me to send them to you. But the idea is you've got a war party in charge, and the intellectual, politics and journalistic party is below. And some of the people who are in the intellectual political party are from the war party. But the people in the intellectual political party don't know who they are, right? So it's very, very like the United Nations, the way the UN is set up, with the General Assembly being the proper political discussion place, with all everyone involved, all the different countries there. And the UN Security Council is just the most powerful countries. And the war countries, they are the ones who are at the security, but they're basically in charge when it comes to these big conflicts around the world at the UN Security Council. And of course, those UN Security Council responsibilities have been falling away, as there's been no attempt even to get a resolution through the Security Council with the Iran war this time. At least with the Iraq war, there was an attempt, even though they failed. And so you have to understand, I think, that where, although Carney and his friends are coming out, coming across as Kissinger did in his day, as the sensible ones in the room, Kissinger made it very clear, do not take on nuclear states, absolutely never, because this, but you can take on anybody else, basically. And Carney will be saying similar sorts of things, being the sensible guy. But, and there's a very big but here, the point of the Bilderberg is to bring in everybody who might be dissenters from Trump under one roof. You might call it the big roof, where everybody knows this is the and so anybody that trots out whatever's being discussed at the Bilderberg, the plans being put forward to try to bring an end to this conflict in the Middle East, they are the ones who will do well. You know, they will be promoted. And this is a lot of Epsteiners are in here, you see. The Epstein class. And the purpose of this is to concentrate the minds of every decision maker who ever went to visit Jeffrey Epstein, and many of them went specifically to get promotion in politics, right? They didn't care. The Epsteiners didn't care about what happened to kids or anything like that. They knew it was a good career move to go and see Epstein. And so what I think it is happening with this future war and the Bilderbergers is they are going to try and own that side of the game. The other side of the game, the Trump game, is the chaos side. And that isn't going to go away anytime soon. So really, I don't know what your thoughts are, but it doesn't seem like there's any going to be any end to this conflict in the Middle East at all. The ceasefires seem to me to be paper thin. And all that's going to happen is it's going to slowly escalate in Lebanon, etc., until the United States, the Russians maybe, but certainly the Chinese too, are going to be getting involved. And I understand you're going to be talking a bit more about China.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to stay with us with the news, you can do so. Where can people find you, Tony? Because you're not only an author, but you're a former BBC journalist. You've got your own radio show. You do loads of things. Tell us a bit where people can find you and stuff that they can go and look at.
Well, I wouldn't bother with X because it's, although there's some interesting stuff on there. I mean, I've been shadow banned quite badly on there. But the main place is the thisweek.org.uk. So just bookmark that. And every Friday, you'll find on that page, you'll find a link to the app, which it works really well, actually. So what I do is I do what a professional broadcaster does, is I take clips of the longer interviews, as you do, and use those. But you can, if you're interested in one of the clips, so, for example, we did one with Christopher Lee last week on satanic inversion, which is a fascinating little mad thing that the Satanists like to do to turn everything on its head. But Christopher Lee, who, by the way, was related to Ian Fleming, as he was his nephew, he talks about that. So I had a little clip on the show, but if you wanted to hear the whole thing, you can hear it on the app, or You know, what I try and do is treat my audience as intelligent people that might wish to go deeper into one item that we don't have time to do in depth as part of the weekly live show on a Friday. So that's what you can do with the app. You can get that on GitHub for Android, and you can get the Apple version at the Apple App Store. It's called the Bristol Politics Show, Bristol Politics Show app. And it works really well, actually. So that's a good way with the
Fantastic.
website thisweek.org.uk and the Bristol Politics Show app. You can't get it from Google. Don't even try, because they completely screwed with the developers. They started putting all of his personal information up online, and he just said, "No, I'm not doing this," which is quite understandable. So they're you know, this is Schmidt and his schwines. Anyway, so that's that. There's also the Bilderberg.org website. And a forum on there, which is the place to go to get some of the latest information, including these lists and some very good analysis about why this meeting's happening from independent researchers. That's Bilderberg.org and the Bilderberg.org forum bulletin board. And then there's also something called 911forum.org.uk, which is a massive database of all sorts of conspiracies, which we've been putting together ever since 9/11. And you know, the war on terror, loads of stuff, particularly about individual assassinations, people dying mysteriously. So, for example, one of the most recent ones, most horrific, is the Soham murders, Ian Huntley and what's happened to him. So there's also John Smith is in there, David Kelly, Robin Cook, the Robin Cook death as well. And so Robin Cook's death was particularly important because it made way for Tony Blair. John Smith, you know, because he went to a Bilderberg conference. He was invited, Smith did. And he said to them at the time, he said, "I'm coming back next year with a really good team of economists to educate you." Only thing is, he was dead before the next Bilderberg conference.
He
And that's when
was.
Tony Blair took over. So over to you, and I'd be interested to hear your news. I'll hang around in the background. I'll do a bit of lurking, Rowan.
By all means, thank you very much for that, Tony. Absolutely brilliant breakdown of the Bilderberg Group and what's going on there. Thank you very much once again to Tony. Comes on, always got something interesting to talk about and always something for you to think about. We are going to get on with the news. Absolutely brilliant from Tony, and thank you for turning up. And Tony may jump on when he sees various things coming up. Now, very, very simply, we need to get on to something that you will want to know quite a lot about. And of course, it is to do, shall we say, to do with the helicopters and everything else that has gone on. Now, let's get into this, because this is incredibly important, and we're going to give you a big heads up on this. The very first thing I need to do is show you a little video, okay? And this is a little something where people have started to catch up, shall we say, on everything that we have been pointing out. Now, you will know, of course, that we've had, of course, you remember we talked about the Golden Corridor on many, many occasions. And of course, that is to do with the railway that is being built by China and by Russia, and obviously, sorry, by China and Iran, and also will be linking Russia and many other places as well. So we're going to give you a quick précis of this. 2 seconds. Let's just set this up for you. And we're going to give you a quick précis. You've already seen this sort of thing that we've been talking about for ages, but now everybody else is starting to talk about this. Have a look at this.
China and Iran have set a launch date for a railway that will fundamentally alter the flow of global trade. That single announcement sent ripples through newsrooms, policy institutions, and foreign ministries from Washington to New Delhi. But perhaps the most revealing reaction came from ordinary people online. One comment spread across platforms almost immediately: "When will the U.S. realize its miscalculations?" That comment cuts straight to the point. This story is not about infrastructure. It is not about cargo schedules or engineering contracts. It is about power. It is about oil. It is about two countries that have spent years being treated as pariahs by the West, quietly and methodically building an entirely different world order, one that does not require Western approval, Western financing, or Western sea routes. If you follow geopolitics, energy markets, or the long-term trajectory of American influence, stay with this. Subscribe if you haven't already. Share this with someone who needs to understand what is actually happening in Eurasia right now. Let's get into it. Here's the core of what is happening. China and Iran are building a 1,350-kilometer railway that connects Iran's central and eastern regions to key border crossings, plugging directly into China's broader overland trade network and extending all the way toward Europe. On its own, a railway is a railway. But this one carries strategic weight that goes far beyond moving freight. For decades, the United States has maintained its global economic leverage through two primary tools: dominance over the world's major sea lanes, and control over the dollar-denominated financial system that most international trade runs through. Nations that fall out of favor with Washington find themselves cut off from both. That model depends on there being no viable alternative. China and Iran are building the alternative. This railway is not a sudden development. It is the product of nearly 7 years of negotiations, setbacks, stalled financing, and geopolitical maneuvering. For years, the primary obstacle to deeper China-Iran economic cooperation was the same thing: American sanctions on Iran.
So there we go. Now, we've already talked about this an awful lot. And of course, you've seen many of programs. We've talked about the 28 Chinese engineers that have been killed whilst setting up all of these interconnecting rail networks. Now, very simply, yeah, they are very good. I don't like the AI voiceovers. That's why I only wanted a couple of minutes of it. Now, very, very simply, whilst all this has been going on with Iran, there's been all sorts of naughty shenanigans going on in the background, including and not exclusively the bombing of that rail line. Okay, really, really important that you remember that that rail line has been hit on many, many occasions, and that's been hit very, very hard. And of course, the Chinese were not very happy about it at all. So I just want you to park that for a second so that you know exactly what is about to go down here. So park that for a second, and let's get in to some of the things that have gone on to do with, obviously, this failed lunacy that has gone on inside of that place itself. So here we go. So let's talk about this. We had, didn't we, two rescued pilots, and we had lots and lots of people, should we say, injured in these rescues and everything else. This was to get, the Americans would have you believe, to go and grab a downed pilot. And, of course, the other pilot that was with him. And, of course, this was an F-15 that was shot down. And this is obviously a wing from an F-15, just showing you, just so you have some idea. Now, this led to the greatest American single military aviation defeat in over 80 years. Never before had they lost so many aircraft. Now, we've shown you the C-130s Hercules that were carrying these little bird helicopters. And you will remember, if you're a fan of the show and you've been watching the show a lot, that there was an insurgence, an effort to make an insurgency from Sulaimania here. And, of course, to cut off that corridor across to Tabriz, and of course to be able to sort out various other things to do with this as well. Now, on top of this, we have, of course, this nonsense about going on about Natanz. Is it nonsense? Well, no, it's not. Let's give you an exact. There is Natanz. As you know, this is the area that you can see. So it's just outside of Isfahan. And, of course, it was in between Kashan and Isfahan where they had, shall we say, that's where the Natanz reactor actually is placed. So that gives you an idea, just a general idea of where we are talking about. Now, we're going to go through some of this with you because, of course, we believe this is massively important that you understand exactly what is going on here. And as I say, we'll just put that picture up one more time. So you can see this bend in the road here, this little bend in the road here. Well, this is Natanz nuclear facility just off that little area there that we're showing you. So hopefully with a bit of luck, you've got the general idea. There we go. That is circled for you, so you've got some idea of exactly where this area is. And we're showing you a nice close-up of it there. Now, the Americans had a base, an area that they landed, and they thought it was a good idea to go there. The American decided that they would do a rescue mission and also try and do this. Let's have a little look. So there is the airfield where all this took place. Now, this is just outside of a place called Chareza, and this is the airfield where they decided to launch the joint operation from. Now, it was an operation to not to rescue the pilot. The F-15 colonel was on his way to oversee what was about to happen. Now, you will remember that we told you that there were some battles that took place outside of Sulaymaniyah, and also some more battles that took place just inside the border. And of course, many people turned around and said, oh, what's this got to do with anything? So this was a general area where the foot battles took place. And if you remember, we had two or three people injured, and then the Americans had to retreat. That is where they found the first one of the three of the two pilots that were rescued. Okay, they sent a group in to go and get them. And of course, they managed to extract it, but not without taking some casualties. Now, we're going to get back to this now. This is, of course, the railway that China are very upset about hitting. Now, China provided, and we have this, you know, we have a very good source here at the Chinese embassy, and shall we say, a gentleman who's given us lots and lots of information. Now, we haven't only just got this from somebody who is associated with somebody who is in one of those units who took part in that operation. We've now got, I've literally had for the last couple of hours, lots and lots of back and forth. And we can now tell you that the Chinese were responsible for letting them know exactly what was going on. Now, the Americans were going to extract the uranium. That's what they went in for. And it was based on Rafael Grossi and the pictures that they have at Natanz nuclear facility, which was in a corridor tunnel waiting to be extracted. So all this stuff that James came out with, they couldn't dig it and this, that and the other. They didn't have to. It was in a tunnel waiting to be transported. 60% of the enriched uranium that was everybody is really, really worried about was actually in that facility waiting to be transported. Now, this is Camp Stone in Iraq. This was going to be one of the choices for the forward operating bases for this mission. Another one of them was going to be Erbil, which is in Iraq, right on the border. And of course, Erbil went up in smoke and they had to withdraw the forces. Now, the reason the Americans didn't want to go on with this, or rather the Pentagon didn't want to go on with this, is because they were forced to retreat from a lot of these bases. Now, let's just get this picture up for you. These dots here are all the forward operating bases that they have inside of Iraq. Okay, so there's plenty of them for the Americans to choose from. And the whole idea was to get in there very, very quickly. Now, I'm going to give you a big heads up here, because obviously having taken part in an extraction, I know only too well what happens when they actually do this. So let's get into this very, very in-depth now, because, of course, people will turn around and go, well, don't believe it, don't believe it. So exactly what happened was they were meant to go and get all of this out. They wanted to get it all out. And as I say, the idea was this forward operating base here. And, of course, flying in, they were hit. And many people have seen the videos of them being hit. And, of course, one of the bases they wanted to use was Camp Vicky, just outside of Baghdad. This is where the CIA planners were. This is where literally they turned around and they said, what we can do for you here, the Chinese turned around and said, what we can do for you here is give you a heads up of where they're going to try and do it from. So have a look at this. This is obviously the video that we've shown you of all the destroyed aircraft equipment. Now, C-130 Hercules were carrying six of these little birds. Two of them survived and were used for the extraction. The Chinese gave the Iranians a heads up that this area was going to be used for this operation. And of course, we've already talked you through last couple of days, all the way through this operation, who's been part of it, what they're going to do, how they're going to try and do it, and everything else. And you remember that this is a video of the helicopters being shot at. Now, all of the planes that were destroyed and all of the helicopters that were destroyed were actually hit by the Iranians, who were rushing people to that site once they got the intelligence. Let's have a look. Now, why was this so important? Well, the whole idea, because this guy had all this operational information, they had to save him. Now, the nonsense we're hearing about a guy walking 110 miles, it wasn't. It was 110 miles away, the actual distance. But the second, the most important colonel was rescued 5 miles, 5 miles away from the crack, from the actual site where they went in. And of course, they got hit really, really badly, and then of course decided to leave the scene. So what we had was a colonel who was flying in to oversee the operation with the F-15 to actually circle around. They had drones up in the air, which were also taken out. And because of the bombing of the railway and that rail line and that obviously that corridor that you've heard about, the Golden Corridor, the Chinese supplied the necessary information for Iran to be able to know exactly and locate where the Americans were from satellite pictures and to give them a big heads up. And immediately, even though they couldn't rush forces there, they were able to get the various militias there, which then surrounded them, started shooting everything. The Americans didn't blow up their own planes whatsoever. There are the remains, as we've shown you before, of a Peugeot there, and they were all damaged, and there were also launches with rockets and missiles. So the narrative that America are telling you about the rescue of this happened, but what they've totally done here is completely disguised. Now, James turned around and said, they'd have to do some digging. And of course, they wouldn't be able to, with 18 men, take over, you know, be able to take over the Natanz facility. The idea was to go in for one day and zip straight back out. Now, this will absolutely surprise you, or may not surprise you. Iran had 12 security guards on that base. No one else. No soldiers, no nothing. 12 security guards surrounding the base because they didn't want to risk soldiers in the event of a strike. Now, we have told you about the tunnels that are made on top of this facility to protect the actual facility that's doing the enrichment underneath. And they are deflection blast tunnels. So you drop these bunker busting bombs and everything keeps flowing out of the side and deflects a lot of the blast away. Now, it was in one of these tunnels that the enriched uranium was waiting by the Iranians to be transported out on the 12th of this month. And that is, we've got that not only from our Chinese friend, but also the Americans had intelligence that this, of course, was being moved on the 12th. So they wanted to go in and they wanted to get it. And then they could then at least be able to turn around to the Israelis and say, look, we've got the enriched uranium. We've had a win. Trump is triumphant. He can do all sorts of press conferences and everything else. And it went horribly wrong. And many, many people are still trying to pick over what's happened and turn around and say, oh, we've got a problem with this and we've got a problem with that. This is now moved. So they cannot any longer get at this enriched uranium. It has now disappeared from the area and God only knows where it is. But at that time, it was in a tunnel waiting to be transported. There were 12 security guards looking after the perimeter. They literally flew in to that area. And the idea then was to unload those baby bird helicopters from the C-130s. Now, I'm going to go into something here. I've taken part in an extraction. You do not go in mob-handed like that. Now, I know the Americans do things differently. But if you're trying to use stealth and surprise, you literally don't go in mob-handed like that. The reason they were going for Natanz and weren't going just to that area for the extraction is they would not have turned up with those helicopters on board to do a search area. They already knew where his location beacon was, and it was 5 miles from the actual disused airfield itself. So they were able to go and extract him very, very easily and very quickly. Okay, and they took off, and they literally took off in one of those birds. Now, 18 men in those six, as they say, little birds, 18 men would have quite clearly, quite easily taken care of 12 security guards. And, of course, then to load it on. Now, not only in that, shall we say, in the 70 people that took part, there were also observers from Israel, and there were also experts in the field of, obviously, to do with enriched uranium. Every single one got out. There were 17 total injuries. 17. No one died. People are saying, oh, they died. The fate of one of the pilots is not known. So there is still that to be considered. One of the aircraft that was shot down, that was hit, and of course, was very, very badly damaged and crashed, and the rest were attacked while they were on the floor. So the pilot of literally one of the, in fact, one of the aircraft, it was a helicopter, and of course, we've seen the video of the, shall we say, the goat herder, if you like, granddad, that actually damaged one of the helicopters by firing at it. So this was an attempt to go and prove to the world how brilliant their forces were. They were going to go in, steal what they could of the enriched uranium, bring it out through Iraq, and one of the forward operating bases inside Iraq was to fly these little birds just across the border into those areas. Because they'd already done the failed insurgency that was meant to go, as we know, to cut off that area from Tabriz, they decided to go for the next best thing, which was, of course, to try and get the enriched uranium. Sounds far-fetched, sounds Roy Rogers, but Trump greenlit this, and the reason he greenlit this, of course, is because he wanted something to be a great win. Now, there is no question at all, no question whatsoever, that the people, shall we say, in the Pentagon were very, very against this operation, massively so, and didn't want to carry it out. And the problem that we have, of course, here is that Pete Hegseth was, of course, very, very instrumental in overruling everybody and making sure that the literally the Pentagon and the military took part in this. This is why the Pentagon are now after Pete Hegseth's blood. They want him gone. As far as they are concerned, they are going to do everything they can to throw him under the bus. So that's the story of Natanz. That's what happened. We not only have it from somebody who is related to somebody in literally in the group of people that I can't go too far into this, but in the group of people that took part in that raid, we also have now our Chinese embassy source who has shown, and I can't put them on here, but I have seen satellite pictures that the Chinese gave to Iran. So this was an operation to go and get it. It wasn't everybody go piling in and rescue one pilot who obviously, and the reason that they also had to rescue him is because he had absolute knowledge of the whole operation that was being carried out. So hopefully that's cleared that up for you. And of course, whether this ever comes to light, whether this ever comes out later on, but this is the reason why this happened. This is the whole explanation of how this happened, why it happened, what they were trying to achieve, and what went wrong. And the Chinese, because this was payback from the Chinese very quietly for the bombing of their railway, which, of course, we've spoken about, the Golden Corridor, for the bombing of their railway, they literally they've been supplying satellite information anyway, but never as detailed. And of course, they've given satellite information on ships and everything else. But this was satellite information given to them almost immediately that they had it, and letting the Iranians know that they were there. And even though they dispatched missiles there, because there weren't, that many IRGC in the area, they were off fighting somewhere else, if you remember, with the insurgents just across the border, where the first pilot went down. This is literally where they dispatched all these militia. And of course, one group of these militia come across this entire group, and they were killed. We've shown you the picture of those five militia that actually came across them. So that is the whole story in a nutshell. And hopefully you've enjoyed listening to it. But there will be many, many people who turn around and go, it's nonsense. And there'll be many people that turn around and go, very simply, you've got to show us it. You're never going to see the proof. But it happened. And that is the whole story. And of course, as you know, our gentleman, who is very close to the Chinese embassy here, is absolute spot on with everything that he's ever given us. And that includes you getting to see lots and lots of drones and lots of missiles that people only got to see much, much later on. And now people are beginning to talk about the corridor, but they haven't put the thing together. Tony's back with us. Hello, Tony.
Fascinating tale. And I've heard various different versions of this. I think one of the first people to really articulate this, who's in a position to know about such things, was Scott Ritter. And I think it shows me, as a former mainstream media, well, I wasn't a producer, just as a journalist, right? Because the producers are the ones that decide which journalists do what.
Yes.
And so as someone who's seen how this works, it shows you that really the great prize of the powers that be, the financial empire, the New World Order, whatever you want to call them, is the press, the mass media. Because when some disaster like this comes along, just as the same is took place in the times of the ancient Egyptians, when there was a massive disastrous battle, so there would be a kind of either nothing said or a spin would be put on it. Now, nowadays, it's very difficult to say nothing. the other thing is, have they produced a pilot who was extracted? I mean, this is one of the other questions you've got to ask. When they're talking about this great, we can't tell you who it is, we can't say anything about them, where is the evidence? This is what we as journalists always used to ask, even of people who were, you know, friendly. You know, this is when the BBC used to be an independent force. If you're getting information from the Home Office or the government of some sort, You would say, well, where's the evidence? You're not just taking things as if you're a public relations arm of the government. And so that's what's so fascinating about all this to me, is the extent of the control of the Western press, state broadcasters as well as private broadcasters, of the military-industrial complex, so that they can have a massive disaster like this take place and spin it to their entire population within a matter of minutes.
And they've spun it so hard.
They have. So the population doesn't get... And of course, once the tale is told, this is how psychological warfare works. Once the tale is told, it's implanted into the minds of millions of people as that story. So to untangle it takes a lot of work, right? So
it does,
whoever gets the first bite of the cherry, they are the people, and the mass media in this case, and the gullible press around the West, and the people that believe it, they get a version of the story. It's very, very difficult to then untangle it, Warren.
Yeah, and I'm going to here challenge anybody from the US State Department or the Pentagon to come on this show and give me any evidence that suggests anything to the contrary, and I will blow that apart. We know this because we have somebody who was very close to somebody who has actually taken part in this. And we've also got our source, who is very highly placed when it comes to, and of course, you know, that we've had drinks with this gentleman and actually been and talked to him at great lengths. We've had coffees with him and everything else. And of course, he gives us the information. And they are quite happy for us to know, or for us to know, that the Chinese did this basically as a revenge. And of course, as Tony says, there's got to be a pilot. There's got to be a pilot. And we need to see a pilot. If we don't see a pilot, then of course we're not happy.
Well, yeah, Tony. He's supposedly a national hero. And yet,
yes.
Where is he?
Yes. I would imagine because there is still a pilot missing. So. And they're saying that there isn't a pilot missing, but there is. It's that simple. Let's get on to our next subject, and it's this one. Now, I'm kind of glad that Tony is with us, because we are going to give the BBC a bit of an award here, because some of the stuff, what they have come out with, is quite ridiculous and quite a disgrace. Let's have a little look, and I've added a little something onto the end here.
Well, more now on Lebanon, where Israel says it's hit more than 100 command centres and military sites in 10 minutes.
What is this rubbish?
Military sites. Of course, we added the picture of the poor children that were killed. There is the BBC saying that Israel have hit tons and tons of military sites. And of course, what they did was they hit civilians. They killed them. It was quite disgraceful in the Lebanon. And of course, we'll get into more and more to do with the Lebanon, of course, because we'll get into the ceasefire and all that. But the BBC there is an absolute disgrace. They killed civilians. Indiscriminate bombing. Sean Murphy.
Well, they were military sites, Warren. You must know that. It was take your kid to work day.
Quite incredible, isn't it? When you sort of look at that. And of course, this is, how can I put this? This is the BBC putting this crap across. And of course, this isn't the first time. Now, they've killed there are over 29 children that died in the 280-odd people that have died, and they're still digging them out of the rubble, and over 1,000 injured. This isn't the first time they've done this. We go back to 1970 in Egypt, where Israel bombed an entire village and killed 46 children. So this isn't Israel's first foray into, shall we say, bombing the living daylights out of just how can I put it, as horrible as humanly possible. This is two girls running away from a bomb.
Hello.
They are continuing to hit Lebanon, and of course they're going to continue to do all sorts of damage. Now, we can get into, and we will get into, what is going on with Iran, very, very simply. Some of the stuff that is being put out about what they have done and what they haven't done and everything else is complete and utter nonsense. And because of that, they closed once again the Straits of Hormuz because of the bombing of the Lebanon, of those poor Lebanese people. And when we have a look at a picture of the devastation, can you tell me what military centres that is? Quite incredible that the BBC would come out with some nonsense along those lines. This was over 100 strikes were done. And of course, it was 18 minutes after the ceasefire had come into effect that Israel carried out a bombing entire, of course. And of course, Caroline Leavitt will turn around and say that the Straits of Hormuz is open. Well, we've got actual proof that it's not. There we go. There's the Aurora. It was turned round. It tried to make passage through, thinking it was open, and it was told to turn round, and it literally had 5 minutes to turn round, or it was going to be blown out of the water from the Iranians. And the Iranians are pretty hopping mad, as are Pakistan. Now, let's have a look then at this ceasefire agreement while we're here. This is from the gentleman who was actually negotiating the peace settlement. Shabazz Sharif, with the greatest of humility, I'm pleased to announce that the Islam Republic of Iran and the United States, along with their allies, have agreed to immediate ceasefire everywhere, including Lebanon and elsewhere, effective immediately. That's from the very guy who took that down. Now, they literally, what happened, and we can go through exactly what has happened here, there was a meeting in the White House. And they literally, you had Benjamin Netanyahu turning around to Trump and saying that Lebanon is not included on the list. Now, Trump has turned around and said, the failing New York Times and fake news CNN each reported a totally fake 10-point plan on the Iran negotiations, which was meant to discredit the people involved in the process. All 10 points were a made-up hoax, evil losers. So what's the truth of this? Well, it's very, very straightforward. Let's show you a pic of the timeline. Caroline Leavitt, we saw it. The president saw it. He agreed to it. A working agreement. It mentions Lebanon. Oh, shit. We never agreed to it. We never saw it. It went in the bin. This is the timeline that they can't even get their story straight between them, which is quite disgraceful. And, of course, Trump was found to be absolutely lying. He even posted in his own post. Let's have a little look, shall we? We have received a 10-point proposal from Iran and believe it is a workable basis on which to negotiate. I'll say that again. We received a 10-point proposal from Iran and believe it is a workable basis on which to negotiate. So Trump had already seen it. He hadn't seen it. It was thrown in the bin. They didn't receive a 10-point plan. It's a totally different 10-point plan. They cannot get their story straight, and it is quite disgraceful. And what is even more disgraceful about this is they were actually involved in the tweet. Here we go. Ceasefire, including Lebanon, elsewhere, effective immediately. And in this were Arachi, Galbay, obviously, Steve Witkoff, Secretary Rubio, J.D. Vance, and Donald Trump. So they saw this tweet. They knew that the 10-point plan was there and that the ceasefire did include Lebanon. Quite incredible that they would come out and still going on about this. Now, Bibi has gone off the reservation, and that's absolutely fine. But do not try and tell everybody that there is no such thing, and of course we didn't agree to it. And we've just highlighted it here for you. We've received a 10-point proposal from Iran. They received it. And believe it is a workable basis on which to negotiate. So anybody reading that surely looks at that and goes, they've accepted Iran's proposal and they're going to go and talk about it. Now, I've said, I've made my feelings quite plain on this. This is an absolute sham. this peace proposal and everything else is complete nonsense. Nobody's going to stick to it. There's no way that America will allow that to happen. It's not happening. Not a chance. And of course, people are going, oh, well, they're going to be talking. Yes, they're all meeting and they're going to be talking. Have a listen to this.
Israel has continued to attack Lebanon, saying it is not part of this ceasefire, despite your Prime Minister, Sharif, saying it is. Can you clarify what the parties of this war have agreed to there? And are you concerned Israel could derail the broader ceasefire agreement at this point?
Well, as the description and understanding has come from the highest level in Pakistan, so it could not have been more authentic in terms of the offer made by the Prime Minister and accepted by the two conflicting parties of affording a ceasefire for 2 weeks. So it could not have been more authentic, and the understandings associated with it could not have been more true. But of course, this is a situation of a ceasefire that could be disrupted, and there have been instances in the past where ceasefires have been disrupted. So we perhaps would all want for the best to happen.
So you're confirming that, as far as the Prime Minister is concerned, that Lebanon is included in this ceasefire, despite what we have heard from the Prime Minister's office in Israel today?
Well, as Pakistan is a faithful facilitator, I think the understandings coming from the highest level in Pakistan need to be accorded primacy and certainly authenticity.
That was Pakistan being very diplomatic and telling them that, of course, what we are saying is completely true. And, of course, Trump saying it was fake. Now, let's just get into this a little bit, because this here, in the very first one, you can see, and we're going to show you this now. Very simply, this was a draft. Shehbaz Sharif was literally reading out this, which was a draft. And it was a draft given to him by the Americans. End of conversation. That was a draft that was given to him to read out. He was reading from the draft of the Americans that they gave to him. And, of course, in the very first email, of course, he left the actual draft on the top of the sheet. So that was the big giveaway. So they are lying through their teeth. And, of course, the Iranian delegation has now arrived, invited by the Honourable PM Shehbaz Sharif. As they say, despite scepticism of Iranian public opinion due to repeated ceasefire violations by Israeli regime to sabotage the diplomatic initiative. We have arrived. The delegation arrives tonight in Islamabad for serious talks based on the 10 points proposed by Iran. Now, the people that are attending this on behalf of America, it doesn't matter whether Vance goes or not. Witkoff and, of course, Kushner are going. Now, Kushner is a very shadowy figure, but Witkoff, we know, is an absolute liar. Remember that Witkoff was the one who turned around and said that the Iranians were boasting that they had six times the amount that was needed to actually set off a bomb, to set off a nuclear bomb. And, of course, they did no such thing. All communications were indirect. And Oman carried the proposals from one room to the other. And Oman came out and said, it is absolutely not true. They never wrote anything, and there was never any direct communication. So they're lying through their teeth once again. Quite incredible that they would be doing this. And anybody that thinks differently, I'm sorry. Anyone who trusts the Americans here is an idiot, is an absolute idiot. You must stay as well, as far away from this as possible. And Russia have turned around and said, just hear what they've got to say. I wouldn't do that. But then again, they are still looking the good guys, and they're going to keep looking the good guys for the time being. We now need to get into, we're going to come back to some of this in a bit. Let's have a listen, actually, to Mark Rutter. In actual fact, before we do Mark Rutter, let's do Megyn Kelly. Mark Rutter, because we want to get on to NATO as well. Let's do Megyn Kelly first.
Trump watched us learn it. And so what led Trump, at 79 years old, to sit in there in that Situation Room when Bibi Netanyahu was seated as an equal?
Yeah.
Trump didn't even sit at the head of the table. Trump sat at the side of the table and Bibi was across from him as an equal in the American Situation Room. What led him to sit there and buy what that guy was selling hook, line, and sinker when every other president was able to see through that liar? What was it? Because he was told the next day by our own top advisors, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to the Secretary of State to the vice president, that these are lies and that these objectives are not going to be attainable. Don't believe him. We might be able to wipe out the Ayatollah, not regime change, Ayatollah, and we might be able to decimate some portion of their missiles and their military. Okay, that's true. But the goals, as stated by Trump when we actually did pull the trigger, were all over the board. And to this moment, he's pushing the BS claim that we affected regime change. Mm. No, we didn't. It's the same regime, just different players. Mm. There isn't somebody more moderate in there at all. We have no reason to believe that. In fact, it looks like the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is in control now, which is far more radical. And the fatwa that had allegedly been issued by the Ayatollah on developing nukes is gone. Iran is more powerful economically. It controls the strait and now is demanding the lifting of all sanctions against it. And what Trump did with that 10-point plan was go from Monday saying, no, not good, to Tuesday saying, very workable, we can do it, as a means of saving face to bail off of his insane threats about annihilating an entire civilization. So I don't know how we got here, Piers. I'd like to know just as much as anybody else, but all I can think in my head, based on what I've read in the paper, is we got here thanks to Bibi Netanyahu, Lindsey Graham, and Mark Levin. And ultimately, President Trump. That's not to take agency away from the president, who was bamboozled. I don't know why. He was too weak to say no. He was too gullible to see through the lies. One way or another, he allowed himself to be pushed into this insane conflict.
There we go. So that gives you a heads up to do with that, of course. And now let's have a look at Mark Rutter. This is quite disgraceful. Have a look.
Effectively, when President Trump threatened to kill the entire Iranian civilization, did that bother you at all as a diplomat?
Well, you know, what I always say when it comes to what leaders are saying, I'm not commenting on everything. What I want you to know is that I support the president, and I know large parts of you do when it comes to taking out the capacity of Iran to export chaos to the region, to Europe, to the whole world. They are one of the main enablers of Russia's war effort in Ukraine. We all know this.
Yeah, all the drones.
With the drones, it is an existential threat to Israel if they would get their hands on nuclear capability. It is great to try to negotiate it away, but we also always knew that with North Korea, it took too long, and then North Korea had its hand on the nuclear, and then you cannot negotiate any longer, and they have that power.
So there we are. That's Mark Rutter. They're, of course, refusing to condemn Trump for turning around and saying he was going to wipe out civilization. Rutter is unbelievable. And, of course, many, many people will turn around and say that, of course, this guy, Trump gave him an ultimatum. They are saying that Trump gave him an ultimatum, that they have literally got to go and help him open the Straits of Hormuz. Doesn't sound like a guy who's suing for peace, does it? And very simply, obviously, Rutter turned around. It didn't go as well as he planned, as Trump planned, because Rutter said, well, I'm powerless to actually turn around and get them to do anything as individual nations. Now, many people are talking that they are going to leave NATO. Trump is going to leave NATO. Now, we spoke to our guy literally there and turned around and said, that is not going to happen. Okay. And you're hearing here first, there are many, many people out there saying they're going to leave NATO to have a go at Turkey. And it could be a possibility that Trump and Israel might want to do that. But we have spoken to our guy, and he has turned around and said, that's not going to happen. And there's a reason it's not going to happen. And anybody saying anything different I've got a bridge to sell you. So let's stop the bullshit about America. This is just for a bargaining chip, okay? They are not going to give up their bases in Europe as they will lose control over them. It is an empty threat bargaining chip to scam Europe into backing your illegal and terrorist activities abroad. And we see right through you. There is no way that they are giving up Ramstein Air Force Base, all their bases in Britain and all their bases elsewhere in Europe. If you think America are going to do that, you are crazy, and it's not going to happen. So all of this, this is just a threat. And of course, he's come out with a Greenland threat, of course, because of this. NATO wasn't there when we needed them and won't be there again if we need them again. Remember Greenland, that big poorly run piece of ice. This is just throwing stuff out to try and get NATO to get on board with what is going on. He knows he cannot take Iran, and he also knows that he, of course, he cannot take the Straits of Hormuz. Now, he'd like to think that he can, but he can't. It's as simple as that. It really is that easy. Let's get in to some other pieces of stuff as well. Hopefully that's cleared up the NATO for you. NATO is a busted plug. It might as well be disbanded because it's of absolutely no use whatsoever. Let's get into some UK stuff now. And of course, we have to start, of course, with this utter clown. First of all, let's go and give it a spin. And of course, we always like to spin our globe here, so you know what we're going to be talking about. So we're going to have a look at the UK, and the very first place we have to start is with John Healey. Let's have a look at this video.
In response to the Russian submarines, I can confirm that I deployed our armed forces to track and to deter any malign activity by these vessels. A Royal Navy warship and Royal Air Force P-8 aircraft, alongside allies, ensured that the Russian submarines were monitored 24/7. The Akula submarine subsequently retreated home, having been closely tracked throughout, and we continued to monitor the two Googie submarines in and around wider UK waters. Our armed forces left them in no doubt that they were being monitored, that their movements were not covert, as President Putin planned, and that their attempted secret operation had been exposed. Those Googie submarines have now left UK waters and headed back north. And this operation, which lasted more than a month, has now concluded. Our aircraft flew over 450 hours. Our frigate covered several thousand nautical miles, and 500 British personnel were involved in the response. And I'm making this statement to call out this Russian activity. And to President Putin, I say, we see you. We see your activity over our cables and our pipelines. And you should know that any attempt to damage them will not be tolerated and will have serious consequences.
There we are. That was John Healey coming out with an absolute bunch of nonsense. First of all, why shouldn't they do that? And secondly, they were also, not only were the subs having a look and keeping an eye on what was going on with Britain, very, very simply, what they were doing was also making sure that their, could have passage all the way through the Straits, through the English Channel and around those areas. And at the end of the day, as Tony was saying, it just goes to show you that they have actually they've got lots of threats, lots of rhetoric, but they're not actually going to do anything. They're completely and utterly spineless. And of course, they use that then to come out with a planted story as well with MI6 at the back of it. Now, the Daily Telegraph is literally Putin mocks Starmer in the Channel. Russian warship escorts oil tankers through the UK waters in defiance of Prime Minister's threat. Well, if you threaten to blow up somebody's oil tankers or threaten to board them, then, of course, they're going to protect them. And they did so, of course. Now, this is being put forward, and he's being put very, very hard by somebody we've already been talking about tonight, Tony and I, someone called Blaise Metrovelli, who, of course, is the head of MI6 and absolutely detests Russia with a passion. So she is putting Starmer left, right and centre. And you may have already seen this video, but just in case you've no idea who the head of MI6 is, or Blaise Metrovelli, here's a little fun video we put together about her.
Love you. I've been sitting here all day thinking, same old dream 10 years away, thinking, now my days are gone, memories linger on, thoughts of when I was a boy, penny farthings on the streets, riding motor cars were funny things. With string flying, telephones are talking things, sighing, a radio and phonograph, Charlie Chaplin made us laugh, silently falling about, familiar things I keep around me. Younger days, clearly come into my mind. Every day I find thoughts of when I was a boy.
Granddad, granddad, you're lovely. That's what we all think of you.
There we go. Literally, her grandfather was a dyed-in-the-wool Ukrainian Nazi who actually signed paperwork to send people to concentration camps. She is the head of the British MI6. And, of course, Tony and I have already gone over some of the people, should we say, who have links and ties to this sort of thing. Another thing that needs to be highlighted while we're on the UK, of course, is Keir Starmer, who's been caught lying once again. He has turned around and said, in the face of Russian aggression, all your bills have gone up massively, and they are the reason for the oil prices and the gas prices going through the roof. So I've got a question for Keir Starmer, and I challenge him or any of his government to come on this programme. 2% of LNG is what Great Britain got from Russia. Can you please tell me how people's household bills in many instances went up by over 200%? If we only get 2% of our gas, liquid natural gas, from Russia. And why were you the person who actually blocked when they were asked for a freeze on this? They were actually asked they actually said, can we freeze the cap on these energy companies? And Starmer said no. So why are you blaming Russia? Quite incredible that these people come out with this sort of nonsense. Hopefully that's cleared that one up. And while we're on, areas of, the UK, where we're talking about Scotland, Wales and the UK, let's have a little... Because there's some, something gone on here that maybe most people don't know about. We're going to have a little look about the fuel prices. Let's have a look.
Clear that some people have significantly escalated an already difficult situation by targeting critical infrastructure such as fuel depots and refineries. These are no longer protests, they are blockades. These blockades are putting at risk supplies of food, fuel, clean water, and animal feed. These are critical for the nation and its people. This is not tolerable, and it is against the law. The willful obstruction of public roads and the movement of vehicles and persons are offences under various statutes, including the Public Order Act and Road Traffic Acts. As part of our well-established graduated policing response in dealing with protests, Angarda Síochána is now moving to an enforcement phase in relation to those impacting on critical infrastructure unless they desist and disperse from these blockades. Angarda Síochána is advising protesters to immediately cease blockades of such critical national infrastructure or face the full rigors of the law.
So basically, they're threatening to get the army out. So here's where we are starting to see already a slight change in this. Nilus.
Yeah, which country was that lady from? Because they had...
She's Irish.
She had a Canadian accent or American accent. That's why I was wondering about it.
Yeah. She's a native of Ireland, so or US descent. US descent, I should say. certainly wasn't a dialect I recognised. So I think you're right. It was probably a bit of both there. But I believe she's from Ireland. So. I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure she is.
They had the RTE microphones. That's what I recognised. I thought maybe this is from Ireland, but she had a very Canadian accent, I thought.
Yeah, okay. That I don't know. I will double check on it for you. But that I don't know, buddy, to be honest with you. But we will find out. I promise. We will dig until we get to the bottom of it. Something else that we need to sort of talk about. We're going to have a little go at the media here. The Times put out that the new Ayatollah has actually been, was either killed or badly injured. He's neither. So the Times is talking absolute rubbish. As per usual, putting out all sorts of garbage. There are a few other things we're going to wrap up with now. Very, very simple. Kaya Kallis has lost her mind, saying that the Straits of Hormuz has got to be free for everybody to transit under international law. This is a woman who has turned around and said we should board every Russian tanker we can find. The stupidity of these people is quite beyond belief. And anybody who thinks for one second that this is okay... This woman has completely lost the plot. There are, of course, with, should we say, the ceasefire and the Straits of Hormuz remaining closed, oil prices and gas prices have gone up again. This manipulation of the market by Trump is beginning to be seen through. It's still working. People, obviously, are still making money from it, which is quite incredible. And now something else that is very, very important. Ukraine and Russia. 1,000 Ukrainians handed over, 41 Russians. This is dead body exchange. And since this has been happening, Russia have received 504 of their fallen soldiers back, and Ukraine have received 17,265. If you want to know how the war's going, just look at those figures. You can listen to all the rhetoric in the world. all the rhetoric in the world, it won't change the fact that when you are handing back numbers like this, you have a real, real problem. And of course, we're going to see more and more of this because it's not going to get any better for Ukraine. That's about 30 to 1. It's not good. We got three fun items. Well, three items for you before we go. First of all, in the USA, a bus driver has been arrested. Have a little look at this. Just managed to move the bus off the railway line before it was hit. The driver has now been suspended and arrested, and rightly so. He drove onto the railway line. There was a steam engine coming. There was obviously a freight train coming. Incredibly lucky that no one was killed or injured. And in this day and age, when there's children dying for absolutely no reason, then, of course, it's not good. The next one I'm about to show you, I had to double check that it wasn't AI, and I had to double check that it was a real video. In Mexico, a gentleman who was cheating on his wife, the wife and the mistress came together at the funeral, and it was only then that the wife found out that it was indeed his mistress. Have a look at this. There we go. That just goes to show you. He was a bit of a boy, that bloke, obviously. There we go. And there's one other thing. You may have seen this morning, but we're going to play it again. There is, of course, one good way to make sure that you stay out of the clutches of the police, and that's to run him around until he runs out of puff. Have a look at this. There we are. There we go. Good fun. All the fun of the fair. So let's just Sean Murphy.
That'd be all those boss hog cigars and donuts that he consumes.
Yes, in one of those. They, as Kevin says, Kevin Ling says in chat there, they didn't send their finest out on that whatsoever. So tonight you've heard about the emergency Bilderberg group. And our thanks to Tony Gosling, and please do go and give him a look on his stuff. And of course, you now know exactly what has happened, all the nonsense that has come out from America about the rescue pilot and everything else. We stand by everything that we have said on this issue, on this program tonight. We know it to be factual because we've actually seen the satellite photographs of this. And of course, we have also spoken to another source as well. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you very much for watching. And of course, we will see you all again tomorrow morning. Take care.